A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by Prose. Casper, I just got a wonderful, wonderful haircut.
It looks so good.
Thank you. I feel great with it, but I cut off over a foot of hair, and that means my long hair was sort of pulling my curls in one way, and now that I have short hair, I need a totally different hair care routine. Luckily, Prose is made for people. Not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And so I used the review and refine feature, and I was like, yes, I still want vegan hair care products. Yes, I still want to smell like a lavender field, but my hair is no longer long. It is short to medium length. Please send me a different formula of shampoo and conditioner.
Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/Harry Potter. So you get your free consultation and then 50% off at prose.com/Harry Potter. That's prose.com/Harry Potter.
Chapter 4, Number 12, Grimald Place. "What's the order of the..." Harry began. "Not here, boy," snarled Moody. "Wait till we're inside." He pulled the piece of parchment out of Harry's hand and set fire to it with his wand tip. I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And I'm Casper Ter Kyle.
And Casper's back on Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Boop, 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 boop.
Hi, Boba. I'm so happy you're back.
Guess who's back? Back for book five. It's me.
I understand. You just can't stay away from me. I understand.
It's really that I can't stay away from these books, but you're also here.
Yeah, well.
So.
You know, that someone once said that 90% of success is showing up. And that's what I do. That's what I do. So Casper, we just have two quick announcements before we start today. One is that I will be teaching another romance writing workshop, getting ready for NaNoWriMo. Very excited. You're going to write a whole 50,000 word romance novel in 30 days.
Whoa.
It's such a fun class. We ran it last year. We're running it again this year. Everybody join. It's all about writing romance as sacred.
I've heard NaNoWriMo, but I can't remember always what it is. What does it mean, Vanessa?
It is the National November Writing Month. And so it is sort of a collective goal where people spend the month of November writing a bad first draft of a novel. And I love the idea. I love the idea of a month of creativity and imagination and anti-perfectionism and working on something that has no capitalist value and doing it in community. It's just a super fun thing. So find out more at notsorryworks.com.
That sounds fantastic.
Thank y'all. And then we have our Patreon perk as our only other announcement today, which is our Every Flavored Bean conversation. And Casper number 12, Grimald Place, is of course something that muggles cannot see. And so I am wondering if you, as a wizard, and I, as a witch, had some invisible thing right next door to us, what would we want it to be?
So many options.
So we will discuss that in our Every Flavored Bean conversation. And you can listen to that if you're a patron. And you can find out more about becoming a patron at patreon.com/Harry Potter Sacred Text. Casper, you are telling a story today on the theme of apathy. And I am fascinated because I do not think of you as an apathetic person. So,
yes. Well, it wasn't a difficult story to think of because it literally happened to me, gosh, last week, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And I met up with a friend who actually has been a longtime HPST listener, which has been really fun to meet new friends in New York who listen to the show. And she and her husband and Sean and I often go to the theater together. So they've got a young kiddo. And so we'll go to the theater, have dessert afterwards. And it's such a like, I feel like I'm having a perfect New York evening. And so we had gone to see a play. We were having dessert afterwards. And the menu was a Parisian, shall we say, lots of French tasty, delicious things. And I was like, oh, Paris, I can't wait to be back one day. And my friend Andrew said, well, you know, I'll probably never go to Paris. I was like, Andrew, what is this tomfoolery? What is this nonsense? You must go to Paris. It's an ethical obligation. And he kind of turned to his lovely wife, Sophie, and they kind of looked at me and they were like, well, you know, we're really flying less, like really trying to not fly at all. Sophie's family lives across the country. So like, that's a trip that they do take once a year. But more than that, they're really not flying. And I suddenly was like, oh my God, I respect that so much. And of course, flying is one of the most negative things we can do in terms of our impact on climate change. It's an incredibly high intensity use of greenhouse gases. And also because it's released into the atmosphere higher, it has more damage. It's just in terms of our individual actions, flying is like really up there in terms of one of the most damaging things we can do. And I should know because I didn't fly for 3 years for ethical reasons. And now here I was kind of espousing the value of like jetting over to Paris to walk along the Seine and eat delicious croissant. And it kind of held up a mirror to me of being like, oh God, I have become, at least in this issue, like really apathetic. It's not that I don't know the science. It's not that I don't know the impact of what I'm doing. It's that I have started to care less, or like something has happened in me that makes my brain not think about that. And it was kind of like this ugly revelatory moment where I was like, oh God, I have become apathetic. And here are two people who I really respect, who, by the way, are not at all professional activists or work in environmental fields. They're just, you know, they have high integrity. And yeah, so I started to think, well, what were the ingredients that contributed to this? And I think partly one of the reasons I've ended up where I've ended up on this is because in the grand scheme of things, one person's actions felt minimal. And I've just felt powerless on this issue. And then secondly, and I think it's a combination of the two, it's because I want the pleasure of being in Paris, like the freedom and the joy, the pleasure that being able to travel so easily offers. I think it taps into a bit of selfishness. So it's like, often apathy is painted as like, oh, you don't care. But I actually think it's more about feeling powerless and like wanting pleasure, those two things combined. And I want to see if that holds true as we read this chapter together.
I think that that's such a wonderful story, Casper. And our listeners are amazing. Like, that's incredible, that commitment.
Right.
I decided to go to Etymology Corner because our beautiful Matthew Potts has inspired me. And it comes from the Latin and Greek, which means without feeling. And before yes. that, it used to mean without suffering. And I think that you can now fly without suffering the guilt, right? And so whatever that is, right? Like, you've built a callus on that guilt.
Mm.
And like, for good reason, right? You're like, the capitalism, the planes are gonna go anyway. And like, you know, there isn't a movement of organization, right? You've become more cynical about these choices. And so now you can fly, yeah, I think apathetically, but without that suffering of guilt. And I just think that your definition is so helpful, and also that it makes sense that like all of that feeling gets eroded over time and you can't care about everything.
Yeah.
And that, of course, doesn't mean that we shouldn't do whatever we can, but holding on to both truths is really hard.
Yeah, and that is the question for me, because I do think that caring is kind of like a daisy chain. I think we've, you know, talked about that before, where like, if you're caring about this issue, it's easier to care about that one. So I don't want to paint it as like a zero sum.
No, of course.
Question. And, you know, clearly we're seeing a group of people coming together as activists in this chapter, right? Like the Order of the Phoenix is meeting at 12 Grimmauld Place, and they're risking more and more and more, and it's going to cost them more and more and more. But I also think we see them, at least in this moment, there'll be moments later where they don't feel it, but in this moment, there's a sense of purpose and hopefulness and like power, right? Like, we're going to try, we're going to do something, it's going to matter. And I think, at least for me, and I think for lots of other people, that even when you've tried to do something and then it doesn't work, or it doesn't feel like it's had an impact, it's so easy to kind of sink back into that place of apathy. So yeah, I'm excited to, not just in this chapter, but like across the book, to think about how do we keep the fires burning of that sense of purpose?
Yeah.
But let's remind ourselves of what does happen in this chapter with a 30-second recap.
Ooh, can you count me in, please?
Yes, I believe you're going first. All right, Vanessa, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
So Harry arrives at Grimmauld Place and Molly is like, can't talk. And everybody's like, can't talk. Also, be quiet. And he gets ushered upstairs, and Hermione and Ron are like, oh my God, we're so sorry. Dumbledore didn't let us tell you anything. And Harry's like, you should have told me things. And is screaming, and Fred and George come down and they're like, are you having feelings, Harry? It seems like you are. And Ginny is like, yeah, you're super loud. And they're trying to overhear what's going on with the Order of the Phoenix, but they're not allowed because they're too young. And then at the very end of the chapter, they get called in to dinner.
Thorough. I feel like that gives us a complete overview.
You know, Casper, I don't want to say that was a 10 out of 10, but oh, what? Close. Is that you saying that? Okay. Casper, are you ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay, you don't need a stretch or hydrate or anything?
Oh, I pre-stretched. I come hydrated.
You're a pro. Okay. On your mark, get set. Go.
So the main thing that I think we need to take into account is that Harry is like desperate for information. Like, he is losing his mind. But when he is asked, have you read the Daily Prophet? He's like, only the headlines. And so I think what we're seeing here in this chapter is a real expose of Harry's failure to look further than his nose is long, as my mother would say. And that he just shouts at everyone else, but doesn't read his own bloody newspaper. I feel like you did really cover the bases.
Percy, and so Percy just didn't get discussed.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. But we'll get to him. Percy will get his due, fear not. So I want to start with the actual title of the chapter, which is number 12, Grimmauld Place. This is a chapter in which we're really getting to know a building as much as we're seeing Harry. And I think apathy actually really shows up in the physicality of the place. In one sense, you could say this building is a victim of apathy. It's run down. There's cobwebs. There's crooked paintings, right? It's unloved. It's uncared for. This is not a place of concern since the Black family has died and Sirius has left. So it's kind of falling into disrepair. And that connects with what you were saying about the etymology, right? This is a place where there is no feeling. And I sometimes, if I'm like on a bus, I'll be like riding along and I'll be like, wow, every street corner, someone has a feeling about this corner, right? Like, especially in a city, like someone's front doorstep is here. And so they care about this tiny little block of space. Like, I like imagining that if everyone cares for like their little block, then that's how the city works, right? But this block, maybe partly because it's invisible to its neighbors, and certainly because it's been rejected, you know, by its own kind of magical world, is in a place of apathy. And yet, there's a dichotomy at the heart of this place, because the magical elements in Grimmauld Place care hugely.
And loudly.
About a lot of things. And loudly. At the very end, Tonks knocks over an umbrella stand, which sets off like an absolute pandemonium, because suddenly painting starts screaming and Sirius's mother is in a painting and she's like, half-breeds, blah, 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 like she's just vicious, racist tirade. And the whole house wakes up, like the whole kind of magical institutionalized superiority awfulness of this house awakens. And it's the opposite of apathy, right? Like, even from beyond death, these items care deeply about the wrong stuff. And it was interesting to me because in the back of my mind, the only living creature in this physical place, of course, is Creature, the house elf himself. And in some ways, the kind of apathy from the wizarding world to this place is echoed in the Order's relationship to Creature and Harry's relationship to Creature at first, right? Like there's this kind of like, oh, you don't matter. Like this isn't important. I'm not going to care about this. And yet the other way around, right? Creature cares dearly about what's going to go on in this place and what it means. And the narrative rests on the Order and Harry's turning to care as much, not that Creature cares in a nice way, but like there is some care that comes back to Creature that ultimately makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just made me think about like how the way we look at places also often turns into how we look at the people that live in those places.
Yeah.
And the lack of care shoots us in the foot ultimately. Yeah. I was curious if anything struck you about the physical kind of material culture of the place.
Yeah. I have a few thoughts. One is that metaphorical structures uphold or diminish these things, right? Part of the reason that Sirius, you know, hasn't been home in so long, he left. Also, he was arrested, right? Falsely charged and arrested, and then has been on the run. And so, right, like there are structures that have been in place that, you know, have caused this building to fall into disrepair. And there were all sorts of spells done, including, we'll find out later, on Sirius's room. So certain things can't be taken down. But also, you know, there's sort of this like war of structures. You know, there have been all of these spells on the house, both from Sirius's mother, from Sirius's brother, and from Sirius himself of like, you can't take down this anti-Muggle poster. Well, you can't take down my pro-Muggle poster. And it makes me think of museums and what big museums feature, right? Because like those are going to be the cultures that are taken more seriously, the ones that are in the like main gallery at the Met. And how exciting it is that different cultures and countries and moments in history feel like they're getting their own museums now. Because if you have a building, if you have a structure, that matters, right? And so what the Order of the Phoenix is saying by choosing 12 Grimald Place is, we need a place to gather, even if it is in origin, like a place that sort of hates us. And I don't think that they are choosing it because it will like constantly fan the flame of what it is that they care about, will keep them from becoming apathetic. But they are not in one of these like apathetic edifices that's like full of cubicles and, you know, like stark gray white walls so that our eyes don't get tired and we can work longer, right? Like this building is inadvertently designed to keep them from being apathetic.
Yeah, it has a perspective.
Yes.
I'm suddenly thinking about if this was not a place where Sirius felt safe to hide, why does the Order think it's a safe place to gather? If they're both running away from the ministry, like, does this reveal something about Sirius's relationship to the place, do you think?
No, I think Dumbledore has now thought to protect it. I think that it's just Sirius on the lam, and Dumbledore is like, you know what I did? I got him out of here. I did my part. And he is now apathetic about Sirius's care. And then he's like, oh, we need a place to gather. Oh, you know what I can do? Put a million spells with Snape and McGonagall, you know, on a place that's safe for Sirius.
Yeah.
And I think that this gets back to your story, right? When you're like, oh, I have a bigger reason to think about this, right? Mm. Whatever it is, when climate change is really hitting us in the face, I think we will all be making different decisions. Not that it's not really hitting us in the face now, but it's only occurring to Dumbledore to sort of organize a group of people here. Also, it was a secret that Sirius was out until recently. Right. So,
and this follows Dumbledore very closely, right? Like we know that he really activates when something fits into his plans. And if it doesn't fit into his plans, like he won't come visit you in the dorms. Sorry about it. Like,
right.
Even if you're dealing with multiple traumas, right? And you're supposed to be in his duty of care. Like Dumbledore is single-minded in a way that like, if it's not in his zone of interest, then right, he's not necessarily going to act on it. That's really helpful. Because, yeah, suddenly this place, and I think we're going to see it, you know, in the next few chapters, the physicality of the place is also transformed, right? The kids are cleaning, there's lots of new spells and spells being undone and blah, 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 blah. Like, they're trying to make this, I don't want to say a house a home, but at least a haunted house, a functioning revolutionary headquarters.
They're trying to make it a more apathetic house, right? Like, this is a house full of hate right now. And I think that they would settle for apathy. Right. When I was a part of that principal training program, it was an incredibly diverse group of teachers who were training to become principals in low performing urban public schools. And there were a group of white teachers who were talking about tolerance and like tolerating people of different races. And there was a woman of color who stood up and was like, I know you're proud of yourself that you are apathetic about my existence, but like apathy in a certain context is actually hateful, right? Like not caring in certain contexts is hateful. And so like, congratulations that you don't care about me and that you don't care about me enough to hate me. And then there are other places where you're like, do you know what? What I would like for you to do is not care about me. There are certain times where people will talk about Jews. And I'm like, why do you care about us? Just don't think about
us. Just let it go.
Yeah. Like, do you know what I would love? Is for you to just like not even think about us at all. And like apathy does feel like enough. And I feel like there's so much hate in this house that they're like, let's just put a curtain over her and she'll be quiet. You know, like, I don't care that you hate us. Just
But I think apathy is... it's not caring, it's caring without the ability to do something about it. Like, it you know what I mean? Like, it's, maybe that's too generous. But
no, that's interesting.
Because, I mean, we do see this with Harry a little bit, right? Like, he's pretending not to care, but he really cares.
Yeah, right? Like, Harry arrives at 12 Grimald Place with a lot of questions and a lot of anger. And the thing that he is like very willing to present anger about is that Dumbledore has cut him out of information, right? He has been looking for information all summer. Hermione and Ron keep being like, Dumbledore told us we couldn't tell you anything. And Harry is really willing to not play the apathetic card there. He is pissed. And it's interesting because he is pissed from a place of insecurity, right? He's like, what, you guys think I can't handle it, right? Like, his anger comes from a place of fear and insecurity. But the thing that he's pretending to be apathetic about, right, is this trial that's upcoming at the Ministry of Magic about whether or not he is going to be expelled from Hogwarts. He has gotten a letter in the last chapter because he performed magic to, you know, ward off the Dementors. He's gotten this letter from the ministry that he's been expelled, and then the amended letter saying, okay, there's going to be a trial. And for Harry, Hogwarts is life, right? Like, the idea of being taken away from Hogwarts, I would argue, is higher stakes for him than Dumbledore cutting him out for a few weeks, right? It is
for sure
life or death to him that he can attend Hogwarts. And he is so scared and so upset about it that his only recourse is to pretend like he doesn't care. Because otherwise, he would be screaming and crying on the floor in fear and be like, I don't know what to do, right? Like, and have to admit how deeply he cares. And so here, apathy is a strategy, to your point, right? I just don't think that apathy is always that. But for Harry in this moment, I totally take your point that he is presenting as apathetic because he feels so deeply.
100%. And there's some shame wrapped up in there as well. Like, he doesn't want Hermione and Ron to know how much he cares. I think partly because he sees them as having alternatives. Yeah. And as you say, like, Hogwarts is everything. Like, if not Hogwarts, there's nothing.
Right. Hermione can go home to her loving parents, Ron to his loving parents.
And he just doesn't have that. So there's a sense of like, yes, the stakes, but also I'm suddenly seeing something about like externally, you know, he wants to present in a certain way, and internally he can't even think about, right? We see on the pages that every time his mind turns towards the trial, he tries to change the subject. And I don't think that's just about shifting the conversation. I think it's about shifting his own internal thought patterns, because he's like, I literally cannot stay present to this reality.
Yeah.
Because it's too frightening. So that's interesting. Maybe what we're starting to see about apathy is that it spans a whole range from like, oh, I just don't care about this, to like, I care about this so deeply that I just cannot even bear spending time with the care that I have for it.
Yeah. My therapist asked me recently, she was like, wow, you're really numb about this. Are you numb because you can't care yet? Or are you numb because you actually don't care, right? And I like had to sit and think about it and be like, do I just not care? Or am I protecting myself from the fact that I care so much? And it's amazing how those things can feel so similar in your body, not caring at all and feeling so much. But like, you know, as someone who's like trying to notice my body and how it responds to things and thinking more about somatic work, I'm like, those two things feel exactly the same in my body.
Mm. I guess the biggest indicator is like, whether you shout in all caps at the people you love.
But yes, that's absolutely right. Like, it is my sleep disrupted while I'm feeling numb? Or am I feeling numb and just able to go about my life, right? Yes, for Harry, it's in this like microcosm. But for me, either way, I'm going to be working at my computer all day, right? Like, I'm going to be going about my life. I'm 41, not 14. So I hopefully am not screaming at people, regardless of what it is. Right. But I do think that in order to figure it out, sometimes we have to see, you know, how it's playing out in other parts of our lives. As you know, what I do in these situations is often call you. And so there are things that I just don't care about. And then there are things that I get so upset about that I'm like, you know, when Roe was overturned last year, I was just like, well, there's nothing to do. Right. Like, I had almost no response to it. Because I was like, well, that is just too upsetting to even deal with.
Mm. And it strikes me how Harry's all caps outbursts are all narratives that are reminding him and everyone else that he is powerful, right? Who had to get past dragons and sphinxes, right? Who had to escape from Voldemort? It's in this kind of self-justifying narrative that we can understand the thing that he's afraid of, which is like, I'm going to be expelled. I can't do anything about it. You've all rejected me. I'm alone. I have no power. So it's, but again, Harry, read the newspaper, buddy. Like, if you're that desperate and you have one resource in front of you, wouldn't we start there?
But you know, sometimes that apathy is a way to get power, right? Mm. Even like, I don't need to read the newspaper, soup to nuts. The wizarding world is forgetting about me. I can forget about it. The only thing I care about is Voldemort, right? Mm. Like, I do think that there can be power in apathy, right? If someone is screaming at me, often the move that I will make is being like, are you done? Right? Like, just like...
like when,
just like the calmer I get, right? I mean, this is...
I have seen that.
Right? Like performing a level of apathy. Yeah. I mean, there are lower stakes versions of this. My best friend Kim, when we play a game, she gets highly competitive. And the more competitive she gets, the less competitive I get, which just pisses her off more. Right? Like they're in... And therefore, I have power again. Right? Like her power is in caring so much. And I'm just like, well, my power is in not caring. And so I think that there is like this internal attempt at power for Harry by trying to not care about certain things.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by Prose. Casper, I just got a wonderful, wonderful haircut.
It looks so good.
Thank you. I feel great with it, but I cut off over a foot of hair, and that means my long hair was sort of pulling my curls in one way, and now that I have short hair, I need a totally different hair care routine.
Mm.
Luckily, Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And so I used the review and refine feature, and I was like, yes, I still want vegan hair care products. Yes, I still want to smell like a lavender field, but my hair is no longer long. It is short to medium length. Please send me a different formula of shampoo and conditioner.
Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/Harry Potter. So you get your free consultation and then 50% off at pros.com/Harry Potter. That's PROSE.com/Harry Potter.
Well, that brings us really beautifully into some of the other characters who we see engage with Harry, because Hermione and Ron are like desperately trying to appease him and be like, no, but we tried. And, you know, and there's difference between the two.
Oh, my God. And Hermione like knocks him over. So happy to see him. Right. Like Hermione has no chill. She's not like, oh, Harry, you're here. She's like, Harry, and like runs to him and grabs him. And he's almost knocked back and her beautiful hair is in his face. It's like, right. She is enthusiastic. No apathy here.
Certainly not. But I think what we see from the twins and from Ginny is particularly interesting, because even when Harry bursts out in his shouting, they don't really respond. Do you think it's a power play in the way that, like, you respond to Kim when you're playing a game? Or is it that they're like, look, me responding to the shouting isn't going to make it better? You know, Ginny is just very matter of fact with what she says. The text tells us that she responds earnestly to one of his outbursts. And it made me wonder, is like earnestness the opposite of apathy? Because it's like, it is careful, right? It's full of caring. And it's showing up in this way of like, I'm not going to be ironic. I'm not going to try and get around it or play it or, you know, twist what's going on.
Or rise to the bait.
Or rise to the bait, right? Like, she's just very straightforward. Which I also made me think, like, wow, if that was what Harry was getting from Ginny in a way that he's not getting from anyone else, not overly, you know, like, oh, you're a hero, not downplaying, but just like straight up, that helps me understand why he chooses her in the end as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because we will find out from Ginny later that she has to some extent chosen a strategy of apathy when it comes to Harry, right? Mm. She had such a big crush on Harry that so Hermione true. Was like, date other people, right? Like, care less. And she doesn't care less, but she is distracting herself, right? She's choosing to go through it, like trying to avoid suffering. And so she is reacting to Harry in a romantic part of her life as caring less about him. And I think that it is that training that allows her this like sort of perfect amount of distance from him, where she's like, look, I still care about you, but I'm actually practiced and like not living or dying by how you're treating me. Whereas Hermione and Ron do live and die by how their best friend treats them and how they treat each other, right? Like, this is one of the most important relationships in their lives. Whereas Ginny is like, I care about you, but if you're a jerk to me, I'm going to go downstairs and hug my mom and play with Tonks and like not care.
Totally.
Whereas then there's Fred and George.
Right.
Who are totally unintimidated by Harry's yelling. Just tease him about it. They're like, oh, Harry, are you here? We couldn't hear you because you were screaming so loudly. And they are not apathetic about Harry. They are just distanced enough from him that his yelling is not scary or interesting to them. Right. Like, they care. Yeah. Little enough about Harry to be like, you're just being loud.
Literally, they say, we thought we heard your dulcet tones. You don't want to bottle up your anger like that, Harry. Let it all out.
Right.
Just brilliant.
And so sometimes I think a little bit of apathy is a good thing, right? We want our doctors to be super calm and to care in theory, but to go about their job without feeling one way or the other about us. We just want them to do their jobs. And I think that Fred and George, it's not that they don't care about Harry. It's that they have that sort of perfect amount of distance to be like, this is going to pass and let's not get worked up about this.
Which is how they also respond to Voldemort. Like, interestingly, right? Like, I obviously don't want to paint Harry as like a Voldemort light, but the way in which the twins handle danger.
Conflict,
yeah. But also love to some extent, right? Like, because I think there's also a danger in that, right? Because if you go too far, everything becomes irony. Everything becomes distanced. And you actually don't allow yourself to like love earnestly in the way that I think we've seen, or at least I've been reading Ginny is doing. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a t-shirt, which I was super into when I was 17 or 18. And it said, apathy is boring. And it was basically trying to be like, yeah, this kind of culture of irony and distance, like that's what's boring, right? Caring is not boring. And so I think it works for the twins. It works for the twins here, but I don't want to live my life like that all the time.
Well, also the twins just show their care in different ways, right?
Yes.
They are using their skills of humor to, right, to diminish the power of Voldemort, right? We'll see them do all these things later. And they like buy Molly a really beautiful robe, right? Like they're not the ones who are going to pull Molly aside and look deeply into her eyes and be like, yeah, you are the best mom anyone could ask for, yeah, right?
Yeah.
But they are going to try to make her life easier in all the ways that they can and treat her as if she's beautiful. And right, like they aren't actually apathetic in general, but apathy is something that they are able to tap into as a strategy, right? They're like, oh, I can just be funny about this. This is so stupid.
And also, I think because the other strategy of caring about following the rules hasn't worked for them. Like, that's not something they're able to succeed at. And so they've had to find different ways. And so I think some of that kind of lulls at life vibe is because, yeah, like if they were trying to pass the OWLs with like all the effort in the world, like that's just not a strength where they're going to succeed. So that's another interesting kind of narrative is like, yeah, how does apathy happen? Is it because like the structures that were in place actually didn't allow you, right? They weren't designed for you to succeed.
Right.
So that's an interesting angle here. I mean, I do feel like we should mention just as also Rams, Molly is the opposite of apathy, right? Like just all care.
She cares so much.
She cares so much, right? And then Percy is this character who now the family has to feign apathy about, right? The twins say like, don't mention Percy's name, right? Dad breaks things, mom bursts into tears every time we mention him. So there's this sort of a culture of silence being built around Percy because of the depth of pain. And maybe this echoes what we were talking about with Harry, and like he cares so much that he has to pretend it doesn't matter. And that's now happening with Percy as well.
Yeah, we also know that Percy, to some extent, is pretending to not care, right? Molly came to his door sort of ready to beg, like, can we please heal from this? And he shut the door in her face and was like, you are not something I care about right now, which we know is untrue. But again, apathy can be a genuine feeling, and it can also just be a strategy that we tap into. So Casper, we are going to be doing Lectio Divina for our spiritual practice today.
My favorite.
And I have picked a sentence at random for us.
Oh, okay.
So this is Lupin talking to Harry right when they get into Grimmauld Place. And he says, but don't go far inside and don't touch anything. So step one, Casper, what is literally going on in this sentence?
So we've just arrived at Grimmauld Place, and Harry is kind of like suddenly seeing this building emerge from between two other buildings, which, you know, would give me pause for thought. And Lupin is saying, you know, get in there quickly, but don't go far, too far inside and don't touch anything, which, you know, could sound like, oh, this is a beautiful old place. We don't want you to damage things. But if Lupin is telling you, there's probably more going on. So I think Harry respects Lupin enough to follow his rules pretty exactly.
I can also just imagine being so annoyed by this. Get in quick. Don't touch anything. It's like, what the heck do you want from me? Right? Like, this is so specific and everybody is telling Harry exactly what to do, but not explaining anything.
Not why. Yeah, that's true.
And this would drive me up the wall. I'd be like, why? I need you to tell me why. I'm not going to do what you say until you tell me why.
And there are enough signs for Harry to also just be a little curious and perhaps wary, right? Like the silver door knocker is in the form of a twisted serpent. Like there's enough signs that are just like, hang on, why are we going here? And is this really Moody? And like, I can imagine just a kind of a wave of reservation coming over him in this moment, which would be well earned.
Yeah, the but is what really is doing a lot of work in the sentence, right? It's, I'm picturing like a pinball machine that's like getting narrower and narrower as far as your options. And Harry is this ball that's like, I need space to go around. And it's like, no, get in for, you know, get in closer, right? Like do this, but not this. It's like Harry's world has suddenly gotten so small in terms of what he's able to control.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of, I don't want to say kidnap victim, that's obviously not true, but like he's being taken without knowing why or where or to what end. Like it is, that's actually really helpful to think about this, even in step one, is like he's massively disempowered even in the process of his own sort of rescue. And so that sense of powerlessness is just, that we've seen explode in the conversation with Hermione and Ron, it's also exacerbated by this experience, even with these people who are there to protect him.
Oh, yeah. He's told we're at the place of the Order of the Phoenix. And he's like, that means nothing.
Like, what is the order? Right.
Right. Yeah. So we will now move on to step two, which is what other cultural stories does this remind us of? The sentence one more time is, but don't go far inside and don't touch anything.
Oh, I'm thinking of like all of the kind of fairy tale stories where there's like,
yeah.
I mean, even biblical stories, right? Like you can have each of any fruit of the tree in this magical heavenly garden, but not this one, right?
Right.
And of course, like what are people going to do? We're going to eat off that tree. Or like walking into, I mean, Hansel and Gretel, right? Like walking into the forest and finding this sweet kind of house made of delicious goodies of gingerbread. And it's just like, oh, you're not allowed, but it's there, but you're not allowed, you know, that kind of duality of desire and restriction. Yeah. What about you?
Oh, I love that. I recently had the distinct honor and pleasure of rewatching Dirty Dancing.
Oh.
And it just reminds me of the training montage, right? Specifically, they are training to do a dance together, Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey, who are just so adorable. And they are supposed to be interacting in like kind of an intimate way. And yet simultaneously part of the training is this sort of famous line where he says like, you need to have firm arms because this is my dance space and this is your dance space. And it just drives her nuts, right? She's like, are we supposed to be sexy? Are we supposed to be distanced? And he's like, well, that is the discipline of dancing both at the same time.
Ooh.
Right. And so that's what it reminds me of, that in order to be highly trained at anything, to be a member of the Order of the Phoenix, to be a killer dancer like Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze, it's this very limited space, this highly trained space. Step three of Lectio Casper is, what does this remind us of in our own lives? But don't go far inside and don't touch anything.
I'm thinking of like going, not just museums, but like, in England, you have lots of kind of old country houses and they're owned by the National Trust. And, you know, on a Sunday, you might go and then there's a tea room and you have a lovely flapjack and a cup of tea. But it's honestly one of my favorite things. Like, the older I get, the more that is just what I want to do on a Sunday.
Yeah.
But there is a sense in which, like, there are things that are preserved. I mean, I went to the Met recently and there's this wonderful room in the Islamic art exhibit where you're like looking into this kind of Syrian meeting room space. And it's both inviting us in, but like literally you can't go into the room. And I'm always like, can't we? Because like, it'd be so nice. Even if it was like one at a time, I know it's not possible, but it does feel like, I know that's what it just reminds me. It's just like,
yeah.
We want you to appreciate this, But like, you can't be in the space.
Yeah, it's why children's museums are so great. And yes. Also why at children's museums, there are all these signs being like, feel free to touch me.
Right.
Right. Because find we've this. So been trained.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a museum, I can't touch anything. And I love spaces that are like, no, no, touch everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
What about you? What does it remind you of?
It reminds me of a complicated recipe, right?
Ooh.
Where you're like reading it. I read these steps over and over again, right? They're like, fold the eggs in, but don't overfold the yes. eggs. And you're like, okay, but make sure it's thoroughly folded. And you're like, mm-hmm, I can do that. And this, like, and the first time you do the recipe, it's so frustrating. And the second time, it's still really hard. And then eventually you're like, no, I know exactly what that means. And I, like, don't even have to look at it, right? And Harry is going to have that relationship with Grimald Place eventually, right? He's going to be like, this is where I can stop. This is where I can't stop. I'll close the curtain. But that first time when you're staring at a new hard recipe and you're like, I don't, what does overfold mean? I don't, can you be, what?
That's so true. Like the first time you're walking in, every tile is a death trap. And like after you've done it 50 times, you know, that like only this tile at the very left is the death trap. And yeah, the like fear abates. But at this point, fear is full alert. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll just say is that there are times in my life where I feel, I think, really strong in any various ways. And so I want a new recipe that's this complicated. And then there are other times where I'm like, I'm just going to make snickerdoodle cookies because I know how to do those really well and easily. Right. Like,
yeah.
And I feel like Harry is at this low capacity moment where he's like, what? Seriously?
Totally.
So what does this make you feel called to, Casper? Step four, but don't go far inside and don't touch anything.
I think the thing it makes me want to do is give people clarity as they enter a space. And I don't mean just physically, like, you know, I've been welcoming people into a new nearness journey. And like, I think I've been thorough in explaining what's happening and when and what we need to do and by what, but like there's always more that we can do to help people feel like they can navigate their own experience in their own context. And so I want to interrogate if there's more that I can do, or if I'm just being like, click this link, and it's like, well, why, where is it going? Like, what's supposed to happen?
Yeah,
because this is, you know, I understand why Lupin is being so short and unclear, but it's not helpful. And even if it was just to explain the purpose, like, this is the place where this happens. This is why we're going in. This is why you should be careful. Please go inside, but not too far, and don't touch anything. Like, it, you know.
Or even just, I'll explain as soon as I can. Right?
Yeah. Like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, trust me, but I'll explain in a minute.
Right.
Which is what Molly does.
Yeah, she's like, I'll tell you after the meeting's done. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I want to be as good a host, I guess, as I can be. What about you? What are you feeling called to?
Yeah, I mean, really similarly, just like explaining why to the kids when I do something. We were at our local pond yesterday, and right, like there's always the moment where you tell the kids to get out of the pond, right? And I feel like it can feel so arbitrary as a kid. You're just like having fun, and then some adult is like, pond time's over. And it's like, what? And then it's like, you know, just wanting to be like, we have to get home at a certain time because Papa's making dinner, and right, like, we want to be respectful of Papa's time. And but maybe like telling them earlier of like, okay, you're getting into the pond, and you know, I'm gonna get you in 45 minutes, so that it doesn't just feel like this random, like, you know, I'm fishing them out of the water in the middle of a game.
Oh, I love pond time.
Me too. Casper, thank you so much for doing this Lectio.
Thanks for leading us. I love Lectio.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This week's voicemail is from Andy.
Hi, Vanessa and the Harry Potter and the Sacred Text team. My name is Andy. I'm from a small town in eastern Kentucky. I only recently found your podcast, so I'm still back in the first read-through of the books with Vanessa and Casper, and I just finished listening to the episode on supremacy from book 5, and this voicemail is mostly for Casper. I just wanted to say thank you for sharing how your friend reframes and rephrases marginalized groups and instead calls them prophetic groups. I think it's incredibly important with the social and political climate of the U.S., you know, in this time in 2023, just, you know, it's been pointed out a couple times that these are the people that we need to listen to, and these are the people that when they say that something's going wrong or that we need to be on the lookout for something, that we need to listen to them. I think Angelina would have seen a lot of issues and would be raising a lot of red flags right now, just like a lot of prophetic groups are these days. And so I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for sharing that and thank you for pointing that out. And I think that's something important that everybody needs to be aware of.
Thanks, Andy. I am so glad you're reminding us of that. And now that we're in book 5, once again, what a beautiful kind of echo of those earlier conversations. And yeah, it makes me want to look at these stories and the characters in them with, yeah, just an extra attention of like, where are the prophetic voices in these pages? I mean, I'm even struck by someone like Moody, who has just returned from being held captive for a year and is already on the front lines, like, you know, but it's hardly remarked upon. And so just, I guess it leaves me aching to hear more from those particular voices and characters. And like, yeah, what does Ginny think about what everything that's happened? Like, what is going on at the margins of this text as well? So I really appreciate you inviting us to pay attention to that with your voicemail.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andy.
It's now time for us to remember members of our community who have been loved and lost. This week, we remember Bishop Willie McNair, who was 75, a father, grandfather, leader who made everyone laugh. Anna Hennessy, who was 24, a daughter, friend, and proud Ravenclaw. Peggy Kiefer, 88, was a grandmother who always made sure her children had a book. Ezra Schneiders, 23, a loving artist and a fierce friend. Andrea Morneau, 76, a proud woman who lived and died on her own terms. And Greg Howard, 58, a Chapman stick player, musician, composer, and artist. May their memory be a blessing. Vanessa, now it's time for us to bless someone in the pages of this book. Who were you drawn to as you read chapter 4 this time around?
Our beautiful Molly. She is just, I mean, one of her kids has like stormed off. Two of her other kids have been like invited into this secret society army and are doing really dangerous work. And she is the only person who does the thing, you know, that we were talking about in our Lectio, who's like, Harry will explain more later. I can't right now, but there will be dinner, right? And it's like, you look thin. I'm going to do everything I can to feed you. And like actually takes that moment. And I would say that she's actually under arguably like the most stress of anyone. And we find out, you know, the text tells us she's like thinner and looks unwell. And I just want to offer a blessing for Molly, who's finding a place for so much love, even as she's under so much stress. What about you, Casper?
I was really struck by Hermione, mostly because of the way she responds to Harry. And she has such a level of empathy and generosity. Like, even though he's like having one of his explosions, and she says, you're right, Harry. I'd be absolutely furious if it were me. Like, there's just such a level of maturity and yeah, just empathy that she exhibits here. And it helped me understand again, like, oh, that's how she endures. And frankly, like, even chooses to go on the book 7, like, solo trip with Harry in a way that just Ron can't hack it. And it's because she is able to do this, you know, it's gendered. I don't want to ignore the elements around this, which are icky, but like, she's such a good friend to him more than anything else. Is just what a beautiful friendship, you know, Hermione and Harry have. And this was just one of those moments where I got to see it. So for anyone who's, you know, supporting a friend in the hard time and for Hermione, yeah, just a blessing of gratitude.
Amen. I would be like, I am ready to empathize with you, but don't talk to me like that. So, good job, Hermione. Next week, we will be back with the beautiful Matt Potts. We'll be reading Chapter 5, The Order of the Phoenix, through the theme of comparison. Casper, thanks for coming back. We'll talk to you soon.
This was fun. I'll be back again in a few chapters.
Just a few reminders before we give our thanks. You can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/HarryPotterAndSacredText. And you can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. And of course, you can give us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We'd like to thank Sarah Amazing, Kevin717, A4Fan, Curly Fry, JessHet1128, Fan of Many Podcast, and Science Baby, who particularly called out Colette Potts. I would like to particularly call out Colette Potts as well. She's delightful. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producer is Caitlin Hoffmeister. We are edited and produced by AJ Yaramas. Our music is by Ivan Paisau and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast. We'd like to thank Andy for this week's voicemail. Laura Glass, Ariana Nettleman, Julia Argy, Margaret H. Wilson, Nikki Zoltan, Hannah Rehack, Courtney Brown, Matt Potts, Stephanie Paulsell, everyone who sent in the names of their loved ones, and a special thanks this week to Casper Turkai.
And right back at you, Vanessa. Love you.
Love you too.